What's up, everybody? Michael Johnson here with the Business Choreography Podcast, and I'm excited you joined me today because today we have Patrick Donahue on the show. Patrick is an entrepreneur and valuation expert. As a chartered financial analyst, he's become a trusted investor, stock analyst, and advisor. He is the founder of Hill Capital Corporation and supports emerging growth companies offering unique insights into finance and business dynamics. Guys, we're super lucky to have him here today and to get as much knowledge and information as we can from him. Let's cue the intro and we'll jump right in.
Listen, there's a lot to learn when growing and scaling your business.
That's why we created the Business Choreography Podcast, where we talk about choreographing your marketing, operations, and sales into dynamic systems that increase your revenue and your impact.
We'll explore solid business principles and discuss all things that make businesses dance to success with clarity.
We'll help you figure out where the holes are in your business and what you can do to fix them. Think of us as your official business choreographers, aka your insider growth strategists.
Remember, your choreography matters. Welcome to the Business Choreography Podcast.
Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity to share insights with you and your audience.
Absolutely. Well, we're definitely going to jump into that. I love starting with backstory because the road to get to this point is never a straight one. And I think it's important that we share with each other, all the entrepreneurs out there, just so that they can all kind of hear and go, yeah, okay, my journey. I thought I was the only one going through that. So I think it's really great and helpful for us to all hear. Let's start from the beginning. How did you get here? How did you get to this point where you're doing what you're doing?
Yes. Well, it like many entrepreneurs, it started with selling lemonade. So
I love it.
As a young kid, I actually have a picture of selling lemonade as a young person with my cousin. And I always enjoyed, you know, kind of that interaction with other people. But what's fascinating about the common thread throughout my career was I always found interesting what things are worth. And so as a young person, you know, why was it, you know, 5 or 10 cents for a cup of lemonade versus 25 cents and, you know, collecting cards and other collectibles, you know, that was always interesting. And then today that has led into investing in businesses and why are certain companies valued the way they are. And it's really the common thread of my work. But how I got here is a lot of zig and zags, that's for sure.
No doubt. And especially, you know, with business investing, we are investors ourselves. And there can be some really big ups and some really, really big downs along the way, especially if you don't know what you're doing. So I can imagine that it's been an exciting
journey. Yeah. I mean, value is not always above zero, right? I mean, things can have a negative value. And,
sure.
And so it's that's why it makes it kind of fun and interesting. But yeah, it can be complex, but that's why I work hard to help entrepreneurs in particular to, you know, simplify and think about, you know, what they can do to actually increase value.
I love that. And it's so important. I think a lot of times it's easy to forget about that element of it as you're building and as you're working through the different phases of your business. Sometimes it's just a matter of keeping your head above water, but I think it's important that we stay on that topic and we stay in that space of being able to increase the value. So you're going to talk to us a little bit today about strategies to propel your company's value into new heights, into new places. And so I want to dig into that a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about Capital Formation Unleashed.
Sure. What would you like to know, Michael? Where should we start? It's a big topic.
It is a big topic. Well, you know, one of the things that we wanted to jump into was the art and science of fundraising.
Yes.
And what that's about, because I think for a lot of people, they don't realize that that's a whole space. So let's dig in there.
Yeah, I think one of the things I really like to speak to when it comes to fundraising, especially for entrepreneurs, is to keep in mind that two things move money. It's trust and emotion. And so when an entrepreneur, you know, thinks about like how they're preparing to go out and to bring in external capital, they need to think about what are the things that they're going to do to build trust and where can they have emotional hooks? Because that's what actually gets somebody to write a check. There's a lot of work out there, and I would encourage people to kind of think about, like, you know, the nuances to a presentation and a style and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's about the relationship with other people. And I talk about this in the book I just wrote, Breakout Valuation. But, you know, especially with fintechs these days and a lot of the technology companies that talk about like, oh, click, 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 and you can get money. The reality is it's not that easy. And finance in particular for small private businesses, it all comes down to that human relationship. So entrepreneurs need to keep in mind that they need to build trust and they need to have an emotional hook. And so one of the easiest examples is something around med tech. You know, when you've got a device that may help prevent a heart attack, there's a lot of people that have stories or know people that have suffered from heart attacks. And so if an entrepreneur's got a medical technology that could help prevent a heart attack, there's a nice emotional hook right now. Now, somebody who's got a technology company and software as a service, they might have to dig a little deeper, but they have to find that thread of why somebody should care and what the emotional connection is. And then trust. Trust is the big one because it takes time to build trust. And so what are the things that can establish rapport early on in a conversation? You know, finding the commonalities of maybe where they grew up or went to school or people they know in common or whatever the case may be. But to be thoughtful and to think through that, to build that trust so they can actually get money to move, because that's the key to fundraising that I think is really not being talked about out in the world.
Absolutely. And when it comes to that fundraising, do you find that it's important that the owner is doing that, or is
yes.
it, does it still work with their team, or do they have to get in and get their hands dirty, so to speak?
Yeah, the founder, especially for early stage businesses, sub 10 million in revenue, and especially closer to startup, the more important it is for the founding shareholder to be the one that's on the forefront and having the conversations. So it begs the question, if somebody is not, you know, extroverted or is not comfortable getting out there and kind of pitching and so forth, what can they do? Well, they do have to do it. They can have other people help them, and they can have them help prep lists or, you know, maybe get out the initial conversations and get introductions made and so on and so forth. But they have to get comfortable sitting down one-on-one like we're doing here today and to have the conversation. And so if they need to be coached on that, then they need to be coached on that. But they early stage founders, small businesses, they cannot outsource that. You know, I've been around this space now for pushing 30 years. There have been investment banks and intermediaries, finders that have helped with this. But at the end of the day, even an investment bank or crowdfunding or whatever the case may be, it's still going to boil back down to the founder, because any investor that's going to write a check for any serious money is going to want to meet that founder and the founding team and get to know them. And that's a critical piece to fundraising.
Absolutely. And maybe we can talk a little bit. I'd like to get a little bit more in the weeds on
sure.
that founder building trust, because like you said, a lot of times the founders are the innovators of the idea. In fact, yeah. some of the founders don't even, they're like, business? I don't want to learn business. I am really good at this thing and I'm forced to do business.
Yep.
So let's talk about those keys, maybe a few keys you can give us to building that trust when you do sit down at that table and it not being awkward for them.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I talk about a number of real value drivers in the book, and there's a bunch of things that people can do. But let me focus on one that is common for all entrepreneurs and is absolutely key. And that is a magnetic vision, to talk about what the business is going to do, what the founder is going to do to execute upon that vision. And the reason I use the qualifier of magnetic is because that vision has to attract. That's key. It's not just about the vision, but it's framing it up in a way that can attract other stakeholders to that vision. So if a business is, you know, producing widgets and is going into a new market, they have to talk about how it can be producing other things long-term in a broader market. No different than Jeff Bezos did with Amazon. It started out as, I'm going to sell books in certain size books and so forth, direct to consumers on a website. But with those early investors and with everybody, the reason it was named Amazon is because he had a lot more aspirational plans than just selling books, than CDs and other things that were easy to mail. And then now we all know how it all turned out today. But you have to be able to convey that big picture of what it could look like in 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I love that. And as they do that, I would imagine a lot of the emotion starts to come into play. But what would be maybe your number one key to pulling out that emotion so that it doesn't just seem dry. I mean, sometimes we are talking about widgets and things that are not necessarily highly emotional. So how can they really get that emotion into play?
Well, a lot of times it's really speaking to how the world is going to be a better place with their business or with their technology at play. And so you could kind of think about scenarios from all different types of businesses. It's really easy when you think about medical device or environmental and so on and so forth, like make the world a better place. But if you think about a business like Amazon, well, why would have somebody said, you know, have that emotional hook? Well, maybe they believed in the idea of, you know, impact and how the world could be a better place to make more products accessible to all people, no matter where they're located. Or maybe there's even some, you know, draws about like, economic impact or environmental impact or whatever the case may be. But there's always something. And that's where the founder can kind of really think through where they want to be able to tie that in and speak to their audience. And sometimes it's the audience that the emotional hook is frankly helping the entrepreneur. That's what's beautiful about entrepreneurship is there's a lot of people that have been successful as executives or entrepreneurs themselves and sold their business. And there's an element that they want to give back and to be able to be helpful. So there can definitely be emotional hooks there, too, of just saying, hey, I'm an aspiring entrepreneur and I would love you to be involved and to get involved with my company. And that could be as simple as an emotional hook that they need.
I love that. I know that for a lot of our listeners and some of the entrepreneurs out there, they've been sold on a lot of different ideas about business. One of them being that they shouldn't take any investment, that they shouldn't.
Yeah, very much capital. So. Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about when the right time would be to go and take on investment for some of those people that have heard otherwise, like, oh, don't take on capital, don't take on investment. What do you feel like is the key indicator for making that choice?
That is a great question. And actually, it's a big part of the book I just wrote is talking through that, because that is the $1 million question. That is worth all the time and effort for founders to really think through that is when and how do they take money? And I can give you some easy things to kind of like think about and so forth, but don't misunderstand and have it sugarcoated to the sheer reality is it's complex and it's a lot of work. The founder really needs to kind of think through what is their vision? What are they trying to achieve? What do they personally want? And what does that look like? And then start to back into how do they need to get there? And what are those milestones? And then what is it going to cost to get there? So if they need to bring in capital, ideally, I'm a big fan of bootstrapping. Can they bring in that capital from internal sources, meaning, you know, them as a founder or taking on personal debt or whatever the case may be to bring in cash and to bootstrap it? Because that's the best way to go, especially at an early stage, because they give up so much equity if they have to sell stock right away. But then if you need to think about external sources of capital, you've got the opportunity to either sell stock. So you're selling the rights to, you know, the payoff someday of when the business is sold, or you're going to be debt where it's in some way, shape, or form, it's got to be paid back over time. We think about bank debt, it's going to be paid back on a monthly basis, but there are other forms of debt that could be pushed out until there's really any payments. But they need to back in and think about like, okay, how much money does this probably need to hit those types of milestones? And then how do I optimize what that is capitalized? And so to your question about like, when is it the right time to bring in money? It is so dependent on where that entrepreneur is, where they are in the life cycle, and what type of money they need to bring in. Because then the equation is not just about the money. We talk about this in the book, talking about the effective cost of capital, because it's not just about the cost of capital. It's about not just the money and what that costs. It's also about what other resources come to bear with that money. So what you were kind of hinting at within your question is that sometimes it can be very beneficial for somebody to bring in money, even if they may not need it, because they may need the help. Classic example, Shark Tank. A lot of people are going on to Shark Tank to raise money, not so much because they need Mark Cuban's $100,000. They need Mark Cuban's network or Mr. Wonderful and Lori and what they can represent to get them into things like QVC or the NBA or whatever the case may be. And that is very real. And that's a big piece to what entrepreneurs need to think about when they bring in partners to help build and grow their business.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about value and and your experience valuating businesses. What are some of the key metrics for a business to raise their valuation and improve their stance and what they're worth.
Well, one of the biggest things for valuation is to tie this back to the magnetic vision. So businesses, most of the time, what people are talking about, and a big reason why I wrote the book, is they think about their business as a multiple or some type of, you know, valuation. Their business is not a multiple of EBITDA. Their business is a net present value of what it can achieve over time. Thus, the magnetic vision and why it's very important for entrepreneurs to think about, like, what are they looking to achieve and how can they get paid for the value today of what that can business can achieve over time? That's the key construct, is to think about and to execute upon optimizing what that business can achieve over time. That's the real value driver. And then there's a lot of things that can go into it, you know, things like brand and trade secrets, and if they're doing things that are on trend, if they've got business processes in place, those are really big pieces. And these are all things that talk about quite a bit in the book. But the one thing I like to point out through that whole discussion is, don't forget about the unsexy thing that one needs to build a big valuation, and that is to survive. And so Steve Jobs had to do this with Apple. You know, what happens when your back is against the wall? Are you willing to call your fiercest competitor and to have them put money into your business? And he had to do this with Bill Gates and Microsoft back in the day to just save Apple. One of my very good friends was head of innovation, or helped with innovation with Steve Jobs at Apple back in the early days. And they literally had the idea and had concepts for what became the iPhone back in the late 70s and early 80s. Well, that's all cute and fine, only if you survive. So they have to get through these bumps to be able to get it, to be able to execute, and to get to some of the funner topics around optimization and cap structure and getting paid for your innovation and R&D and so forth. But don't forget to survive along the way, is what I like to point out to people.
Well, and that can pose its own set of challenges, as it were, anyway. And there's no doubt that's a challenge. Let's talk a little bit before we close up here about the interplay between business value and seller autonomy. That's a topic that you like to talk about. And I want to really dig into what that means. I want our listeners to really get that.
Yes. So, yeah, and please ask additional questions here, because this is a big topic as well. So, you know, as an entrepreneur and as a founder, you know, thinking about like autonomy, and a lot of the founders, I mean, probably you could really say like all of them, I mean, they became entrepreneurs because they want autonomy. But then there's this interplay. If they're bringing in investment partners, they have to be able to work as a team and to work with others to be able to execute. And so that valuation is a very key interplay on how that works, because one is exchanging stock most of the time, which has a value to it for the ability for the entrepreneur to get the cash in to be able to execute their goals and their plan. And so that is why I always start the conversation around vision and what the entrepreneur wants to achieve, because some entrepreneurs want to and need to have like investors involved that are very hands-on, and that they have a board of directors and are helping, you know, ideate and set the strategic direction. And there's some entrepreneurs that they don't want any of that, and they may not need that. And so if an entrepreneur and a founder can start there and really think about what they need, then they can craft what's going to work best for them and for their partners. Because the other thing I want to, before our next question here, the things we're going to talk about, but I really like to highlight for founders and entrepreneurs that they need to think about and interview their capital providers as much as their capital providers are going to interview them, because it is a bit of a marriage. They have to get comfortable with each other, because it's very much a business partnership. There's going to be an interplay. And once especially stock is sold, it's not impossible, but it's darn hard to unwind that or to redo that once stock is sold in a business. So it's super important that entrepreneurs think through that dynamic on the front end.
Absolutely. And what a crazy situation to be in when you get after the fact trying to make it different, exactly right. Nearly impossible, and probably damaging.
Yes. And that's why, you know, that's why I also like to highlight and help entrepreneurs understand, like, debt is not the four-letter word that a lot of people make it out to be. You know, debt can actually be extremely friendly to entrepreneurs. There's a lot of, conceptions around what debt is, but people don't understand that there's a lot of things outside of like a traditional loan and, you know, a bank for closing on a house or, you know, cars and stuff like that. There's a lot of other things a business can do. But the beautiful thing about debt is it's always pretty straightforward. It's like you can pay it off and they can be done. But when somebody buys stock, you can't just be like, I'm going to give you your money back. Now, if you've got somebody that holds the stock and is a nice person, they'd probably be willing to do that. But a lot of times it's not that easy. So,
right, right. Well, and that's a huge element of setting up the words ahead of time. And anyone out there who's been involved in any sort of deals, it's one thing, and it's probably from the olden days, a nice handshake and some honor would go a long way. However, the nice handshake and the honor aren't spelled out in so many words so that it protects both sides. And I think that's an important element to make sure that you keep in mind and put into play. And don't lose the energy for that in the beginning just because you want to get the deal done.
Exactly. That's very well put, Michael.
I love the topic. You know, obviously we're investors as well in the business space. And I love this topic. I feel like it's so important that our listeners are thinking about improving the valuation of their business and looking for the right time to get involved in gaining and pulling in capital if it's the right thing for you. I feel like that's a really important element. And you've mentioned your book a couple times. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and where people can get it?
Sure. Well, I wrote the book because as you're talking about, I mean, for the vast majority of entrepreneurs, their business is their most valuable asset. And so it's all about thinking about how to maximize the value of that asset. And so I wrote Breakout Valuation because I've been at so many meetings over the past 20, 30 years where, you know, I hear entrepreneurs talking about things that they think are really the value drivers, and they're not. They're lines being fed by Wall Street and M&A advisors and others that, frankly, in large part, they want to dupe them out of their business. And so I'm really tired of seeing entrepreneurs being fleeced. So this book was written as an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs to help kind of level the playing field and help them understand and utilize tools that can help maximize the value of the business for them and their family and their communities. And so I wrote the book. It's available at all major sources, Barnes & Noble, of course, Amazon. And I recently just released the audiobook. So it's on Audible and audiobooks.com and all the places you can get audiobooks. And so I didn't think a book like this would actually be an audio format. And I had so many entrepreneurs encourage me to do it. And I'm so happy I did, because I know a lot of people consume content like what you're doing here, Michael, is providing in audio and easy of formats to be accessible. So that's why I did that. It's out there. And then there's a lot of resources that come with it for free. It's all on breakoutvaluation.com. You can get a free website or a free spreadsheet and all the kind of the supporting materials on the website. And then it's super easy to find me because I'm at patrick@breakoutvaluation.com. I love to hear from people. We always get back to people. I love to support entrepreneurs and happy to share any insights to be helpful in people's journeys.
That's amazing. Guys, you got to go check out breakoutvaluation.com, get the book and get the audio. That is so cool that you did that for us. And it is such a great way to do that. You can get in, consume that in short order and be able to get the information you need about all of these topics. Patrick, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here and joining us today. And of course, before I let you go, can you leave us with any sage words of wisdom from your journey?
Yes. Well, thank you, Michael. The sage wisdom I would provide, and I kind of hinted at this throughout our conversation, but is to be authentic and to be yourself. I mean, you know, with a lot of entrepreneurs, there's a lot of coaching out there around people to say, you know, try to be this or do this when you go in and meet people. But at the end of the day, when you are your authentic self and you sit down and meet with potential investors or business partners, when you can speak from the heart, it makes it a lot easier and a lot more fun. So be your authentic self and the rest will take care of itself.
I love it. Thank you so much. Yeah. All of you listening, go check out Breakout, breakoutvaluation.com. We'll put the links in the description so you can find it and get to it easily. And we appreciate you being here listening to today's episode. Don't forget, keep choreographing your business, all parts of your business, even in prepping for the future and the valuation of your business. All of that's so important. Keep on choreographing. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for joining us today.
Want more business choreography?
Check out our website at bizchoreo.com to find out more.
And find out how the choreography for your marketing, operations, and sales can raise your revenue and create more impact.
Remember, every business needs choreography.